You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Halaiva. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll take a look at the big picture of agriculture in Hawaii with one of the masters in the field, as well as dial in on some important crops and their successful growth in Hawaii. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is brought to you by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kasilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700 square foot warehouse at Pui Industrial Park, Lahui. Family owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
Yes. Thank you so much to our underwriters, and a special thanks to our good buddy Mickey Sussman. Finally got down to his beautiful kuleana in Anahola and got to see his incredible plantings and the stewardship he brings to that place, the koa trees, and his workshop that his unbelievably handmade instruments come out of. And just want to thank him so much for standing so strong, leading the community advisory board here at KKCR. And it's really individuals like Mickey who make this place happen year after year and represent the best of what community has to offer here on Kauai. We want to let you know that our fun drive is coming up soon, so we want to encourage you to head over to kkcr.org and check out the opportunities. We are doing a early bird special drawing for a night, a stay for two at the Hanalei Bay Resort for people who sign on to our fun drive before we actually begin it, and then also consider jumping in and becoming a wave rider and getting your announcement out there many, many times. People really do hear those. There's over 100 during the fun drive itself, which begins, I think it's on the 15th of May, so it is coming up soon, and we're looking forward to celebrating that with all of you. KKCR.org. This is In the Garden on the Farm. I've got two wonderful guests in studio. I'm going to start off with our celestial session, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty. We're going to talk a lot about the key foundations of agriculture, organic agriculture success, how to achieve it, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other farming and gardening activities. For today's Hawaiian Moon Phase, brought to us by the 2016 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, we are welcoming in, just before midnight tonight, Ole Kukahi Moon. and Ole Kukahi will rise over Kauai 4 minutes before midnight tonight. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 5:37 a.m. tomorrow, and she'll set at 11:19 a.m. 63% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated. And we have the last quarter moon coming up Friday at 5:29. Ole Kukahi is the first of three Ole moons in the waning phase of the Hawaiian moon month. And this is not a time from these observations to recommended for planting or fishing. However, it's a good time for weeding, and all this late spring, early summer rain is making those roots a little bit more easy to pull out. So we know you got them. It's a good time to pull them. Good time to pull that tarp over the compost pile so it doesn't get too wet. And for our biodynamic look at things, thanks to Robin at Heaven on Earth Starts for our reading today, we have entered the ascending moon phase, which sends the energy up to the upper portions of the plant, the above ground portions, making it generally a good time to do our pruning, our grafting, or our air layers, as well as making cuttings too. So this Wednesday through Thursday, the moon is in Sagittarius, a fire sign. And that's a good time to work with our fruiting plants. There are various other aspects to the biodynamic readings, not just the moon, but also the constellations. And so this is considered unproductive. So this does coincide with the Hawaiian moon today. Not productive time, just let it flow. However, and that would be through Thursday. However, starting on Friday, the moon enters the constellation of Capricorn, and then stays there in Saturday. This is an earth sign. It's good time to work with your rooting plants, cultivating sweet potato, and Robin's going to be cleaning up her taro patch, so we could join her in on that. Sunday and Monday, the moon is in Aquarius, an air sign, which is a time to work with our flowering plants, cuttings, vegetative propagation. So hopefully we will have some good weather, not too windy and not too wet, Sunday and Monday for making cuttings. And then on Tuesday of next week, the moon enters the watery constellation of Pisces, which is a good time to work with our leafy plants, prune, weed, and feed the Holy Trinity, says Robin. I'm not quite sure what she means by that, but work with our leafy plants coming up on Tuesday of next week, and that's our celestial session. And without further ado, I would like to welcome my two special guests into studio today. I'll start off here with Andy Sarhanis, and many people know him as of Andy's Organic Farm from Maui, from Big Island. Sorry. And Andy's been an organic farmer here for nearly 30 years, a practitioner, started in 1976, did a lot of firsts here in Hawaii, brought a lot of some of the more obscure tropical crops into wide gained acceptance and into the marketplaces locally, nationally, and internationally. And he's cracked the code on a lot of the organic skills, understanding the soils. He's a mine of information. I hope this is only the first of his visits to In the Garden on the Farm. And we're also joined here by David LeCocq, a longtime resident of the North Shore of Kauai, and certainly somebody who aspires to some of the heights that Andy has reached, following somewhat in his footsteps. But, of course, we farmers always find our own track through the jungle. So really excited to have two friends. It's always good to have people who know each other here in the studio, who admire each other's work and dedication to caring for the Aina. So Andy and Dave, it's great to have you on. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you,
Bob. Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you to pull those microphones right up to your mouth so we can hear you. And let's start off with you, Andy. So you're somebody who I heard about many times before I met you, and from all people, and I would say with the most detail, from our dear friend Son Hadley, speaking so excited in glowing terms that you were going to be visiting his farm, and he was just giddy with excitement that he'd be able to connect with your knowledge and your skills. And I know you guys have known each other, but exciting to have you here and say hello.
Well, thank you, Paul. And I'm so elated to be back in the islands after being gone for 11 years. I've been back for 3 weeks, and I've never lived on Kauai. I've visited numerous times, usually as a guest of Dave LeCocq, and I went surfing with him on numerous occasions, and got some nice waves and got my butt kicked too out there. Anyways, I feel so welcomed here. Mm. And I just feel so right being here, and I have a lot of gifts that I've received from the universe that I would like to share with the people here, with the land here, with the Hawaiian community, and I intend to work as a consultant, advisor, and teacher here in agriculture and related fields.
Fantastic, and we're really excited to be connecting with you in that way as we continue to develop the design of the Regeneration Seed Center up in Kalihiwai, and everything from the soil to placement of key components so that we have a beautiful system that works well together, mimicking nature, etc. It's important to begin from the ground up, and when we think about your relationship with the Hawaiian Islands from the ground up, I'm wondering if you could take us back to the mid-70s when you first arrived here, and what was it that really captured you, and what sort of Hawaiian Islands did you find back in the mid-70s? Because I wasn't here, and I hear it's changed a bunch. But how was it for you when you first arrived, and where did you sink your roots in?
Well, when I first arrived to live here, actually I was visiting, and I spent a summer on Maui. I think it was 1975. I spent a week backpacking and hiking and exploring, and then I spent a week on the Krishna farm in Piahe, which was a revelation, and it was one of the greatest experiences of my life, and I can't get into the detail of it, but it was so nice to be on a farm where I didn't need money, I didn't need to go anywhere, and I was taken care of, and I could just connect with the land so deeply. And I should go back to when I was born, and I grew up in Massachusetts, and I took to my dad had a big garden, 60 by 100 feet, and out of the four children, I was the only one interested in it, and I was like glued to that garden like it was a TV. Every morning I woke up, went out there, and just was watching everything grow every day, day after day after day, and that's how I learned, you know, but just by watching my dad, you know. So I became, I grew up a natural child of nature, you know. I mean, I watched the four seasons in New England every day, you know, the ice form, the ice melt, and everything. And but I became a surfer in 1967 on Cape Cod. And then I came to the islands. I surfed in several tropical countries before that, Puerto Rico, Tobago, Mexico, and El Salvador. And then I came to Hawaii to visit in the summer and decided to move back there. So I moved to Maui and started raising sunflower sprouts and had a garden and did all kinds of things. You know, it was back in the 70s, late 70s on Maui, it was quite an amazing time to be there for music and dancing and celebration. And I saw Fantuzzi perform for his first time in the islands, you know. And decided to move to the Big Island, and I landed in Kopoho. I actually spent a week there with two close friends, and you know, as soon as I flew into the island, I knew I was moving over there. And And I didn't, you know, I went to Kapoho, and I knew I didn't need to look any further. I was home, you know, and I was there. It was an amazing place to be at that time. And I was so thankful to be there, and I bought a farm, and then I bought a few other properties and sold some of them, but I ended up farming anywhere from 6 to 12 acres and got very deeply in debt and thankfully got out of it. But I it was sort of an experimental farm. I tried to grow everything, of course, and I'll advise anyone starting out who wants to pursue professional farming to specialize in just one or two crops, you know, outside of mixed vegetables. But I don't grow ginger and bananas and pineapples like I did. You know, it's like trying to be an electrician, a plumber, and a carpenter at the same time, you know, full on, you know. And that's, you know, I saw how the local farmers, they just grew one crop or two crops, and they did it to as perfectly as they could.
That's interesting to hear, because as I think about plants that are of different statures and taking different niches in the soil, it seems like if you found the right combination, if you're opening that soil up and you find some complementary crops, tropical crops like that, that could coexist and not compete with each other, that would, just theoretically speaking, seems like it would be a good approach, rather than, because we always have this fear of monocropping and just focusing in on one crop. But I've heard the same from seed growers who say if you want to develop seed for vegetable crops, choose one vegetable is really the only way you're going to have a considerable amount of success with that crop, too. So I would imagine that you did, I mean, no matter what you're growing, you have to do crop rotation, though. How would you address that if you weren't growing multiple crops?
In some things I did crop rotation. I grew ginger and turmeric and galangal for 20 years or so, and I would rotate the fields, and I would wait two years before I planted the same crop. And I would plant vegetables, cover crops, and sweet potatoes. I often followed with the ginger because it seemed to do well after the ginger. I grew a lot of sweet corn as well. And as far as mixed cropping, it's best. It works better on a smaller scale. And, for instance, if you're growing bananas on any kind of a large scale, it's a terrible thing. Or pineapples. They don't do well, you know, in a commercial enterprise mixed with other things. It ends up being a mess.
Okay.
You know, but if you have a little tiny garden, then it's a different story.
Right.
Yeah.
Too many different management styles for each crop? Is that the biggest challenge? Is it the marketing? Is it everything about trying to do more than one?
It's a lot of things, but it's also the cultural requirements of the crop. You know, you wouldn't want to interplant pineapples with bananas. The bananas might blow over and fall on your pineapples. And pineapples like a lot of sun. They really prefer full sun. And the way you grow bananas, you know, as a crop is in a stand, is you grow them at the right density so they shade out the understory so that the weeds are weak. Because otherwise, if the grasses are getting too much sun underneath the bananas, since we don't use herbicides, then the grasses are going to strangle the roots of the bananas.
Excellent. So you mentioned finding your farm in Kapoho. And I'm wondering, so for people who are listening and are considering they want to have a farming or agricultural project and they don't have land yet, or they're not stewarding something yet, there's a real consideration. Any piece of land in Hawaii is not like every other place. So I'm curious to know if you had a real look around at different kinds of soils or rainfall, or if you just happened upon this place and it was just perfect so you didn't have to look any further, or how you would recommend to other people who are considering that choice that you've gone through.
Yeah, in my situation, I just felt so at home there. I was just home, you know. And And I really liked the climate. It was near the ocean. I love the ocean. And as far as the Big Island, a major factor, of course, is cost. You know, and so many of us don't have deep pockets. So that's the only option if we want to buy some land is the Big Island. And
water was available.
It rained a lot, and we're off of county water. We're off of electricity. We're off telephone lines. I was off building permits. I was off flush toilets. I did the whole nine yards. We use solar for heating water and for electricity as well.
And what of the soil in that location?
It's so much thinner than the soil as you find in, say, Kilauea, you know, and it's quite variable. If you look at a geological map of the Puna District, it's this mixture of different ages of lava flows covered by vegetations or almost zero vegetation. So it depends on how old the soil is and also if it was A'a or Pohoihoi. And also the individual eruption, you know, it could be a factor. There's many, many things, you know. But, you know, often there's not much soil at all. There's a lot of rocks. So you're faced with growing orchards and then importing some soil to grow a garden. Mm-hmm. You know.
This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, and we're speaking with Andy Sarhanis. He's an expert organic farmer with 3 decades of experience here in the Hawaiian Islands, back here on Kauai to share the jewels of knowledge that he's gained over a while and many, many different circumstances and many, many depths. So soil building, when you have thin soil or you have poor soil, is a super important thing to be doing. And when you start with very little, making compost, cover cropping, there's various methods and a lot of opinions on where the focus should be going. What's your take on it, Andy?
I read a biography of Luther Burbank, the greatest person in American agriculture and horticulture. And when he moved to California from Massachusetts, he bought 3 acres. And the first thing he did was haul 80 or 90 wagon loads of manure to spread on his fields. So if your soil is not like virgin and super fertile, doesn't have like 18% organic matter as some virgin soils did in certain valleys in California, and you could grow crop after crop with no fertilizer, no compost, then the first thing you want to do is test your soil. And use a lab that tests for the major cations and all the trace minerals. It's wiser to use more in the beginning than less, you know, but it depends on your budget as well. But if your soil is poor and it needs needs a boost, then it's good to hit it with a lot in the beginning just to get it up and running. And then it's like an alive powerhouse biological system that can generate more biomass more readily, and then it can be self-sustaining.
And do you have a laboratory that you tend to use?
I would suggest people to use A&L Labs in California. They're in the Central Valley. And I use them for quite a number of years, both in Oregon and also in the Big Island. And that's the lab that Sun uses himself.
Yes. And so they're used to seeing test results from Hawaii. It's not a brand new thing to them.
Yeah, all kinds of people send test results to them.
Great. And you said you did crop rotation, and I'm wondering how much you relied on cover crops to build your soil.
I use them to a significant degree, you know, and I would use sometimes I try different things, sun hemp, buckwheat, Sudan grass is an excellent one. Mm-hmm. And if you're farming with tractors, it's wise to have a forage harvester and not a rotary mower because it does a much better job of chopping up the green matter and making it so it'll more readily decompose mm-hmm. in the soil.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So let's scale out our discussion a little bit here, backing up to some of the bigger picture. And we talked just before the start of the show about the importance of getting acquainted with if we're landing in Hawaii, maybe we have just moved here or maybe we've been here a while, but we've never taken the time to really take note of the cultural context that we find ourselves in. How important is that from an agricultural perspective?
Well, you can't separate agriculture from the larger culture as well. Mm-hmm. But anyone landing here for the first time who intends to stay any length of time needs to become acquainted with the history of these islands and the history of the interaction of the Caucasian race with the Hawaiians, and also to know the Hawaiian agricultural traditions and the crops they raise. And the book Hawaiian Planters by Handy and Handy, that's like the best book if you really want to know the story in depth. And also talk to the local people, talk to the Hawaiian people, visit farms, you know, get on your bicycle and ride around the farming regions and get out there and see, you know, and of course go to the farmers markets as well.
And of course we have a long tradition of plantation agriculture here, and lucky enough to still have some of the people who are involved in those operations too. So to just remember that context as well. And certainly there are remnants of many different kinds of agriculture that are still here. For those of us lucky enough to live in forested valleys, we could find some of the remnant native Hawaiian plantings. If we find ourselves on a wide plain, we might find the remnants of large-scale agriculture and perhaps some of the wastes, whether they be chemical or physical, that have been left behind. And all of these things are important to take into context. Of course, the agricultural water systems that used to feed tens of thousands of acres here, still present, but very tenuous at this time. So, yes, the cultural, historical context. You were telling me, too, before the show, Andy, that you view time as a continuum, that there's really no difference between the past, the present, and the future, and that it's all one or a wave. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I'm a believer in the wave theory of looking at the universe, that everything is vibrations, and vibrations are waves. And those of us who've been surfers are fortunate enough to become one with one single vibration. A wave has crossed the ocean perhaps hundreds of thousands of miles and breaks on a reef or a point, and we get to be with it. But I have a degree in history, and I call myself a historian, but also a herstorian. And so there's his story and her story, and perhaps some other time on another radio show I can get into that. But and so, for instance, we are at what's looking like the terminus of the patriarchal monotheistic warrior priest male dominant wave, which started about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago in the Middle East, and it's interacting with the ascension of the feminine wave, which has been suppressed by the male dominant wave, as many of us know. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is the biggest issue on the planet. And full empowerment of women and the feminine, and release of our Mother Earth from the bondage of misuse. That's where it's, that's the direction we need to take.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, this is In the Garden on the Farm on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. We're here until 1 o'clock. Tracy's coming in for Kauai Vibrations, and stay tuned for many more great hours of programming. Shaka Kayaka just strolled into the studio. He's got the Pupule Show from 3 to 5. And, yeah, we're having a party here at KKCR, and we're speaking with Andy Sarhanis, and I'd like to ask our other guest in studio to join in on the conversation now. It's David LeCocq from the North Shore. He's no stranger to organic production of delicious fruits and vegetables, and I was lucky enough to enjoy one of his heirloom strawberry papayas. He donated the seed to the seed bank, but he also hooked me up with three delicious fruits. We've already shared them at the Earth Day Rising event this past Sunday with growers, and banking it and getting ready to grow more still up at the food forest. So, Dave, thanks for coming in. It's great
Thank
to
so much,
great
Paul.
To have
I
you
love
here.
Your show. It's a very refreshing show after the Sovereignty show and Amy Goodman. It's always nice to get back into the garden and.
Well, they both bring us news we need to hear,
so much respect for Kailani and Uncle Andrew and Donovan. You're absolutely my heroes, and you're amazing. Yeah. I love your show.
Uh-huh.
And, beautiful day out there. We had a lot of rain in Hyena today, and then the sun bursted out. So whoever's gardening out there knows that all the gardens are really happy today, and that brings me a lot of joy to be a part of this beautiful island, to have such radiance and such beauty in our life every day. So
awesome.
I'm just really glad to be here. I don't know if I'm going to be as well-spoken as our friend Andy Sarhanis, who is, you know, he's one of my mentors in life, without a doubt. I started up with the pineapple, the sugar loaf, which is his trademark pineapple, back in the early 80s here. I believe I was the first one to have the sugar loaf here. So my connection with Andy goes back then. I had a lot of friends, ex-Taylor campers that moved to Kapoho, and that's how I got to hang out in Kapoho, because I used to go visit them after the camp broke up. So we all got hunkering down in Kapoho, and that's where I met Andy. So, yeah, it's been really a great opportunity for me to do the pineapples. I'm back into it. I've been back into it for almost 10 years now, and I've been one of those lucky farmers. I'm one of those Unga Galunga type farmers that just go in there and power out. And you know, the only thing I can say is if you want to plant a fruit tree, plant a nice deep hole. You know, you got one shot at it. You know, you're gonna do it right, or you're gonna kind of skin the surface and not give each tree a wonderful home to live in for its whole life. So mm-hmm. out in Hyena, there's a lot of rocks, and I used to dig out these 4-foot deep holes and throw a whole lot of compost and a little bit of chicken manure and potash, and everything just grows really well. I have a lot of topsoil, which is kind of rare in Hyena, but you know, my fruit trees have always flourished. They're still flourishing after 35 years. One of the reasons of that, too, was back in the late 70s, I met this man named Hideo Tashima, who was this amazing little Japanese man who had a nursery in Omau. The story behind Hideo that was pretty amazing, he grew up in the Allerton Gardens. His father planted the Allerton Gardens, and when he was 2 or 3 years old, the garden was planted, so all the trees were as tall as he was at the time, and he told me that he grew up in the garden with the trees. As they grew, he grew, so later became the head gardener, the head caretaker for Allerton Gardens. So he was also the mentor of my life as far as fruit trees grow. I planted his fruit trees for over 20 years on the North Shore here. It was my main business until the pineapple thing came along. And Hideo had the most beautiful varieties of fruit trees. And if anyone ever wants to come to my farm or my home in Hyena, I've got lots of amazing fruit trees that you can graft off of or do air layering with that were from Hideo's hands. And he passed away like 10, 12, 15 years ago. And anyways, I still just cherish his trees. And it's just been such an amazing stroke of luck to have met him when I did and to have been able to have planted so much of his wonderful trees here. Wow. On the North Shore.
Amazing. Yeah. I didn't know that aspect that he had the nursery. I knew that he was the master gardener at Allerton. And
you would have passed his nursery. His nursery sign was 6 inches long and 1 inches high. You know, he was so humble that you would never find the place unless someone drove you there. But his garden, and I mean his nursery, he had ornamentals, but his main thing was his crafted fruit trees. You could go to his yard and sample the tangerines or the avocados before you would eat them, you know, and you knew exactly what you were going to get. And so I've got this one avocado called the Case, C-A-S-E. I don't think there's a whole lot. That's my favorite, you know, besides the Malama and a couple ones that I got later on. But he grew some of the best varieties, and I was lucky enough to be a recipient of all of his amazing trees. And then Andy comes along with this pineapple, and I don't want to boast about my connection with the pineapple, but I was the first one to have it here, and now I'm back into it. So I consider myself one of the leading organic pineapple farmers here on Kauai as far as the quality, and we've kept the strain absolutely clean and pure and isolated from the other different types of pineapples. So, it's a wonderful thing to grow these. I've got July, August, and September is harvest time. I'm always looking for new friends and new people to be able to share those with. So if you ever want to give me a call during the summertime, you have any big events going on, I'd love to share my...
Great, and what's your number?
Pineapples. You can leave a message on my wife's cell phone, which is 651-1242. Mm-hmm. And that would be a great thing for to make some connections with more people who I can share these wonderful pineapples. I grow them up in Kapa'i, I have virgin soil where I grow my pineapples up at Andre's, up on Kahuna Road there. It's a 24-acre organic farm. Yeah. It's never received a single drop of Roundup, and we're really proud of the fact that everything up there is so pure that we have a spring of our own that we water everything with, and it's set up to where it's, you know, once again, I fell into a really lucky kind of situation where I don't have to be a scientist. I can just throw things in the ground and they grow. But Andy taught me a word many years ago. It's the word meticulous. If you want to really grow a successful garden, this is about the only thing I can really share with you that I've learned, besides learning through all of my mistakes, is setting up your crop in a very meticulous way so your workload isn't so hard down the line. Is really important. And if anybody wants to any consulting about growing pineapples in general, I would love to help with that, you know. And I'll also have lots of keikis at the end of the year, so anybody interested in not only pineapples but pineapple babies, I will be able to spread some of those out too and help you get started in whatever pineapple growing you'd like to pursue.
Awesome. Well, let's jump back to Andy with the white sugarloaf pineapple. Give us a background for those of us who don't know about this magical treat. Where did it come from, and how did it come to you, and how did you know it was the one?
Well, after one taste, you know it's the one. when I was on Maui, I had some friends who were, you know, earth people like myself, and we used to go harvest an abandoned field, the smooth cayenne yellow pineapple, and sell some and eat some. And when I moved to the Big Island in 1978, I think it was maybe the second winter, there was a little old Filipino man who would bring in a few boxes of white pineapples to this little, a couple local stores in Pahoa. And so, you know, I bought some and tried them, and I go, now this is, it's like, you know, I would tell people later on, you've never tasted a pineapple until you tasted one of these. And so he would bring in his extra slips and shoots to sell. And so I had the storekeeper save all of them for me, 25 cents each. So I got several hundred the first few years and just started propagating them. And then I also got some from Ginger John Caverly, the legendary organic farmer on the Big Island, who's now on his sixth farm, I believe. I just spoke to him this morning. But he was in Kona way back in 1971. He started. And he had white pineapples there. He had them way before I did, and he was selling them. But you know, he wasn't on like a real large, super commercial scale. So I started planting fields of them, and then I eventually got up to 3 acres of them, and shipped them all over the islands and all over the Big Island and to British Columbia, and I sent a few LD3 loads to the mainland and. One LD3 load to Japan, actually, 1 year. Mm. And but as far as the its origin, that's an interesting question. I was told different things, that it was like an old heirloom variety and it came from someone's backyard. But what I learned was talking to professional pineapple people, and Hawaii was once the pineapple capital of the world. And there was a PRI, Pineapple Research Institute on Maui, and they did a huge amount of research and crossing and propagating and developing cultivars, huge amount. And so the white pineapple was one of their varieties that they got, but they discarded it because it wasn't a suitable canning variety or a shipping variety. It's more tender, and it doesn't have any acid, too, so they want a pineapple that's both sweet and acidic for canning. So anyways, so someone salvaged it off the dump heap and started growing it in their backyard, someone over there on Maui or Oahu, I guess. And so so some people had it, you know, and that's sort of the story in a nutshell.
Super cool. So the white sugar loaf pineapple, how big is it in the marketplace these days? Is there a lot of it grown, or is it still quite small?
It's becoming a little more popular, just because once you taste one, like Andy said, you'll just never want to go back to any other type of pineapple. It's just the ultimate pineapple.
Yes,
it's,
I agree.
And, gosh, you know, there's a couple of small farms that are popping up. Jude and Paul, have the biggest farm of white pineapple now on the island. Mm-hmm. I only have about an acre. I'm just a single one-man show up there. I still unga galunga out with my shovel and you know, I'm not much into machinery and high-tech planting, but I think that also brings kind of a special quality to my pineapples, too, because I just love that, just such an organic, yummy, you know, spring water fed, virgin soil, you know, type of pineapple. It's a wonderful opportunity to for me to keep going forward with it. And
yes,
I'm expanding here and there, maybe out by Thomas and Jesse's out there and down in Ko'olau Road. We're going to open up a little plot out there, you know, by next year. So, yeah, I got some up Waipa Valley. I gave some to Stacy up there, and you know, I'm just passing them around. It's real fun. Yeah, having a good time with it.
And they're mostly grown from side shoots from the plant. Is that right? And
well,
vegetative.
You normally want to grow off
slips.
The slips, which is the little cakeys that grow on the stalk that actually hold the pineapple.
Okay.
Underneath those, you get the shoots, which are growing off at the base of the mother.
Mm.
You can let those go for, you know, two or three crops, but after about 5 or 6 years, you want to pull out and start new with the new mom, okay. mother there, because they get smaller and smaller as the years go by.
Right.
And but that first year is always the funnest, because that's when you get... I know Andy's, he told me he once grew a 14-pound white pineapple. I think I've gotten up to about 11.5 pounds, but... you know, he would send me these pineapples. It was the craziest thing when I started, when I first introduced him here. I would go out to the Young Brothers. They would open up and be able to, you'd be able to pick up your goods there at 1 o'clock. I'd have to race back to the White Palm Market by 2. And after, you know, a year or so, the word got out that these pineapples were like, you just had to get them. And I'd get back there and try to set up, and I'd get flocked by 50 people all at once handing me $20 bills, and I was just, it was so hectic, and but it was so fun all at the same time. I never made money at it back then. We ate a lot of pineapple, and even today, you know, I don't want to discourage any organic farmers out there who are trying to make a business growing organic, you know, and being a farmer. It's not a rich man's, you know, occupation. I mean, I see Ben Ferris. He still drives an old truck around. He always has beat-up surfboards. And, you know, he's one of the old-time organic farmers around here. He's such a dedicated farmer. But it's a labor of love. Organic farming, bottom line, you're not going to get rich, but you're going to your life will be very rich, and it's a wonderful life. You know, more organic farming. Let's just keep going forward with that. There's a lot of organic farmers sprouting up on this North Shore, and it's just a wonderful thing to see. Yeah, so it's a wonderful thing. Just keep doing it, people out there. Organic, you know, farming, we're going to take over the world.
Oh. There's the truth as it is from Dave LeCocq. And we're here in studio with Andy Sarhanis as well, offering organic farming consulting services. And Andy, why don't you throw out your contact information for people who'd like to be in touch with you?
Sure, Paul. Yeah, presently I don't use the computer. I'm actually looking for someone who wants to be my assistant and to handle computer chores, secretarial things, and so ideally someone who'd like to learn the field as
it's
well.
Gotta be.
Yeah. And my phone numbers here on the island are 828-2039. Presently, there's not a answering message machine hooked up to it. But if you want to leave me a message, call my cell phone, which is 541-499-2924. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. So pineapples, if we're going to have success with them, so I'm thinking, Dave, you described this meticulous method of setting up your system. Well, for somebody who's never done it before, what does that look like?
Well,
how important was it for you to visit Andy's operation or somebody's operation and see what really works, or did you take the long road of, I tried it this way and I tried it that way and I finally found the way?
You learn from your mistakes. Yeah. You know, in order to get as much out of the property that I've grown on, I try to grow. What I've learned is you can reach in from one row on a bed, say, that's 9 feet wide. I can reach in about 4.5 feet on each side to do the weeding. Right. So if you want the optimum for a small piece of land, I would suggest doing your rows real wide. And For two reasons. It's also really important that the pineapples hold each other up. You want your pineapples not only to all go off at the same time, because if they don't go off at the same time, a lot of the time your patches will collapse because they won't be holding up each other like they do in a grid pattern. If you understand, it's like the width really helps hold everything together. I also believe, and it might not be the most organic way to go, but the weed cloth has always worked good in the fact that when you plant on the weed cloth, the roots spread out under the weed cloth. And like I say, these pineapples get really big. So as the pineapples grow, the plant wants to like tilt over. The pineapple has a tendency of falling over, and especially on the edges of the bed, they'll have a tendency of wanting to collapse inside of your row. But if the roots are growing underneath the weed cloth, it supports the plant from actually blowing out of the soil and falling over. Okay. So I've learned that, you know, I know Andy grew in macnut husk back there on the Big Island. He had a lot of success doing that. But
I actually had a plastic mulching machine, mulch layer. I used plastic mulch and macnut husk. But weed control is essential.
Mm. Yeah. So
and mulching, you have to mulch with something, you know, because if you're battling weeds, you'll never make any money if you're spending so much time. And pineapples are not fun to weed at all.
Yeah, right. And so does conventional agriculture rely a lot on herbicides in pineapple production, or are they just using the plastic mulch as well because it's even easier than herbicide?
Well, they use both, combination of the two.
I know that the perimeter is probably what they would spray more than the interior of the crop, you know, on top of the pineapples, so thank God. Yeah. But anyways, I have there's a 6-month regime after I plant of weeding, and then basically I can walk away from my whole patch, you know, for the duration of their life. If you stay on top of it for 6 months in the pineapple patch, and especially if you lay the weed cloth out there for like 8 months and kill most of the weed seeds that are already present, you can help eliminate a lot of the ongoing, you know, propagation of weeds inside your pineapple patch, which I found really good to do. But, you know, staying on top of it for 6 months, these pineapples get real big. My pineapple plants get 5 feet tall. So there's no room for weeds to grow in after they get established, which is a really good thing. So anybody, you know, need any consultation on pineapple farming, I would really love to help out, you know. And if you want to, you know, see me at the end of the winter and get some babies, I'd love to get anyone out there started, you know, on their own little home crop, or they want to go, you know, a little bigger than that. There's a couple of things, even down to the, you know, point of cutting a big enough square for the pineapples to grow on, because the base of the pineapple plants can get really large, and if you don't cut the weed cloth wide enough, the plant can get choked out. So there's all these little tips that I've learned from my own mistakes, like I say. So I've reached a point now where my pineapple patches are absolutely immaculate, and you know, it's really been through all of the trial and errors that I've had, you know.
Right.
But I also grow in one of the most beautiful spots, like Andy said. You want all day sun for pineapples, and you want, you know, a bit of a taper on the land. The first thing that'll kill a pineapple is too much water. If you're in any kind of a boggy situation where the water holds in that area, you may not have much success. I build my beds up to about 3 feet high, so the water flows down my little you know, trails in between the big beds, to eliminate any of that from happening, because it gets wet up at Makalea up there. It's a pretty wet area up in the back of Kahuna there.
Yeah, I'm remembering Michael Wise's beds up there at Andre's farm. He made them very, very high.
Yeah, you want to plant high beds. Yeah. In other areas that are low, I mean, I know Jillian and Gary at down by Secret Beach there, they've been growing the pineapples, keikis, and they don't actually build up beds, but they're pretty dry out there, and they can get away with it out there without building big beds. But like I say, if you do own property that is wet, the pineapples may not do that well. But like, we're having pretty good success up Waipa, which I was a little worried about because it's a pretty wet valley there. But things are going really well there. I was actually pretty surprised.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, for those of us who don't have as virgin soil, and perhaps Andy needed some more supplement with his fertilization than maybe you need, but That's a real mystery for me, never having been a pineapple grower, is what are the fertilization needs through time for the crop?
Well, they, like any crop, they'll respond to, you know, a high level of humus in the soil. And they don't like a real high pH. If it's too alkaline, they won't like it at all. And also, excessive iron is also a problem with the crop. In fact, it's interesting, when the pineapple plantations started happening here in Hawaii in the old days, even though there's a lot of iron in the soil, they became iron deficient. So they would spray iron on the crop. And also, they respond. It's the best crop for foliar fertigation, because the fertilizer settles in the where the leaf meets the stem, is like a little bowl or cup, you know. And so the plantations, they had a big truck with a big long boom that went over at the field, and they sprayed. They didn't actually spray. It came out in a bit of a stream of fertilizer mixed with the water on top of the plants, you know. But they need NPK and trace minerals like anything else, yeah.
Personally, I like the Hendrickas fertilizers. I use the Hue Magic and the soil enhancer in the very beginning stages for the soil, and then I just toss the complete. They don't really like a high nitrogen, so the spring nitrogen might be a little hot for the above feeding for the for at least my pineapples. But so far, that's what I do. And once again, Gary and Jillian down there on Kaupea Road are the distributors of, yes, Hendrickas fertilizer. Yep. So you may want to check those guys out. I don't know their number offhand, but you know, you might want to, if you can find them. They're the first little farm on the left as you're coming off of by the lighthouse down Kaupea Road.
Kaupea Farms.
Yeah.
These guys really know.
They're awesome people.
Jillian Seals, the Quiet
out.
Farm Connection.
Yeah.
And we're lucky enough to have Hendrickas living on island as well. We've had him in studio. It's time for another visit, Hendrickas. I hope you'll come in and see us soon. So we have only a couple of minutes left, so I want to thank our guests so much for coming in and beginning this discussion, the generosity shared with your experience, and also the both of you offering to help raise the skills and the success of people with gardening and farming ambitions or current activities here on the islands. And so thanks again so much, Dave Lecoq, for coming in. And please share your number again for people who would like to be in touch.
Okay, that's 651-1242. And you can leave a message for Dave. That'll be great.
Fabulous. And Andy, thank you as well for coming in. And again, I hope this is just the beginning of our discussions together here on the show. There's so much more to talk about, but we're really grateful you're here to share. You know, people are trying so hard, and well, there's the inevitable mistakes we make. We like to jump past some of the mistakes that have been made before and go for the gold that has been mined by practitioners like yourself. So we're very fortunate to have you providing agricultural consultation services here on Kauai. And it's been a real pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure for me.
Great. And I'm going to throw out your number once again, 541-499-2924. Andy Sarhanis, Master Organic Practitioner. And that does it for our show today. If you'd like to hear archives of the show, you can go to kkcr.org. And click the audio archive link at the top of the page. You'll find all the In the Garden on the Farm shows that have happened before, and lots of our other talk radio programs. Please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy, and Tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha, everyone.